So, now that we had our two introductions, we're going to begin the book of Daniel. The book of Daniel is part of writings, it's part of Kituvim, which according to some means that it was written with Ruach HaKodesh, which is a lower level of prophecy. So, our story begins where Nebuchadnezzar has ascended and conquered Jerusalem a second time. He will still conquer it a third time. He conquered it initially in the fourth year of Yoyakim. In the fourth year of Yoyakim, he became king. And that year, he conquered the Assyrian Empire. The next year, the fifth year of Yoyakim's reign, he conquered Jerusalem. And then for 3 years, Yoyakim paid his dues and behaved like the servant he was to Nebuchadnezzar, till the eighth year of his reign. And then he rebelled. He stopped paying taxes. And that's when he spent 3 years in rebellion. Okay? So in his 11th year, that's when Nebuchadnezzar came back and reconquered him. So Nebuchadnezzar conquers the temple, and he takes the holy vessels, and he brings them to Babylon. And the first thing he does is he brings them to his idol, his pagan god, and places them in front of the god, saying, "You see, you were victorious over the Jew and his creator." And then Nebuchadnezzar says to his chief eunuch, Ashpenaz, he says, "I want you to bring me Jewish children from the nobles, Jewish children from the royalty, children who are good-looking, children who are symmetrical, who are beautiful, children who have no blemish, children who are intelligent and have high IQ and potential and understanding, children who have restraint, self-control, so they can contain themselves and they won't cry when they're away from their home or say they have to go to the bathroom when they're in the middle of an official meeting. And take these children who have all these traits and educate them. Teach them our secular studies. Teach them our language. And ultimately we will see if these Jews are as smart as they say they are, if they can be my advisors." And the king gives a directive, how much food from his royal food and how much wine from his royal wine should be allotted to each child. And he says they have 3 years in our educational system, and at the end of 3 years, I want to interview these Jewish children. So they summon a mass of Jewish children, and they put them into the system. And among the children are three children, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. These four Jews are descendants of the tribe of Judea, descendants of the king, and they are going to be Sarisim. And there is an ongoing argument throughout the book of Daniel whether the word saris means literally a eunuch, or the word saris can mean a servant who is not necessarily castrated. The simple understanding is that this is the fulfillment of the prophecy that Hashem told Chizkio. You remember when Chizkio showed the Babylonian king the treasures, the Holy of Holies, so then he was cursed. Hashem told him, descendants of yours will be castrated in the Babylonian Empire, and these are those descendants. So that's the literal understanding of what's going on here. We have two opinions in the Medrash. One opinion says that Daniel was married. So that certainly doesn't sound like he was a eunuch. So that's why some say that the word saris became the term for servant. It doesn't have to mean a castrated servant. It became a general term for a servant in the king's court. So, the man in charge changes their name. The name Daniel means Hashem judges me. He changes his name to Belshazzar. The word Shatzar means wisdom. Baal is the Babylonian idol. So he says, his wisdom comes from our idol, Baal. Daniel's going to be very smart. So they name him Belshazzar. His wisdom is from our idol, Baal, not Daniel. Hananiah means what? Hashem has mercy over me. He changes his name to Shadrach, which means one who is pampered. Shad is like a child who's nursing, and Rach is pampered. So Hananiah means Hashem has compassion over me. Shadrach is, he is the pampered one. Mishael, his request is of Hashem. He changes his name to Meshach, he who draws to himself wisdom. And Azariah means Hashem is my help. He changes his name to Aved Nego. That means a servant to an idol. Okay? So they change their names to names that indicate that they will be faithful to the Babylonian religion. And Daniel decides that he does not want to defile himself eating the king's food and wine. And so he asks the one in charge, do me a favor. Let me have kosher food. Let me not eat this. And so the one in charge tells him, you know, I'm scared of the king. The king specifically instructed what you're supposed to eat and drink. And he'll see all the kids. He's going to interview all of you at the end of 3 years. And he'll see that you guys don't look as healthy as the other kids. And then I'll get killed. What am I supposed to do? So what Daniel does is he understands, and that's the wisdom. You always have to understand what's being said and what's not being said. Okay, what did the one in charge tell him? I have no problem with it. He can't tell him that. He tells him, I can't do it. So if you listen closely, that means find another way to do it. You can find another way to do it. I can't approve it. You know, in life you have to know how to read between the lines. I could tell you stories, but I'd rather do Daniel. This happens in life, where people are telling you one thing and you have to hear the other thing. And it takes a knack. You have to develop that knack to listen closely to what's being said. So Daniel understands the hint, and he goes to their waiter, and the waiter has been appointed by the one in charge to decide who gets what. So he tells the waiter, why don't we do an experiment? You give us lentils to eat. You give us like chulent beans. You give us beans and stuff. And give us water. We'll eat that and drink that. And at the end of 10 days, see if we look less healthy than the other children. So he says, fine, you know, 10 days. He says, it's a good deal because he gets all the royal food. So for 10 days, he's cooking their beans and he's cooking the meat. And he gives them the beans and he takes the meat. And at the end of 10 days, they look more healthy than all the other children eating the royal food. So the waiter is eating their food and he's giving them their cooked beans. He's taking their royal wine and he's giving them the water. So these four children were extraordinarily smart and they were extraordinarily capable of learning. And Daniel had a knack for understanding visions and dreams. And at the end of the 3 years, they are summoned before Nebuchadnezzar, and he interviews one by one, and none can compete with Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And the king appoints them to be his steady advisors, these four Jewish children. And any time the king has a question, he finds them to be so much smarter than his sorcerers and his stargazers. All his advisors can't compete with these four. And the conclusion over here of this intro is that Daniel would be in a position of leadership, of advising the king till the first year of Koresh. And we're going to have to revisit this because we're going to see that there were many kings called Koresh, and which one this means will have implications on the whole book of Esther. Was Daniel in a position of leadership throughout the book of Esther? Meaning, the question is, when it says he was in a position of advisor to the king throughout the time of Koresh, does that mean the early Koresh? That means that that right away in the beginning of the Persian rule, he was removed from that position, and then he was not a key player in the story of Esther, in that role? He was a key player in a different role. Or was he around till deep into the Persian Empire, till a later Koresh, and actually he was out there, he was in the king's palace all the time the whole story of Esther is taking place. She has one confidant, Daniel, who's there. Daniel, who's in a position of leadership. He's a top advisor to Ahasuerus as well. He has to compete with Haman. One opinion says that Memuchan, the one who gives him this advice of beheading Vashti and ensuring that every man is boss in his house, he chooses the language, that was Daniel who gave him that advice.
Didn't the people say it was Haman?
Right. Okay. I got to tell you the Medrash you don't know. That's a Medrash you do know. Okay. So we'll get there. So we move on. So Nebuchadnezzar has a dream. It's been 2 years after he's destroyed the temple. The Jews are out in Babylon, enslaved, impoverished. And Nebuchadnezzar has one concern. He's conquered the world. And he keeps thinking, what's going to happen? The prophet Jeremiah has said that the Jews are going back to the temple. That means that at some point, my kingdom is going to be over. That's not good. Everything I amassed, I want this to be eternal. What's going to happen? Someone else will take over for me? So Nebuchadnezzar keeps thinking, what's going to happen after my time? Now Nebuchadnezzar has a huge worry because Jeremiah's prophecies have come true. Jeremiah has said that Nebuchadnezzar would conquer Jerusalem. And here, his prophecy came true. So now Jeremiah says that the Jews at the end of 70 years are coming back. Everyone's worried. And we're going to see that that worry is going to be the drive of the book of Daniel and Esther. Both books revolve around the concern, do the Jews have a future? Because if the Jews have a future, that threatens us. So we have to annihilate the Jews. That's the drive behind these two books. And that's where the book of Daniel will actually be the backdrop to the scene of the book of Esther. The book of Daniel will sharpen the understanding of a Jew's role in the world in the eyes of the Babylonian and Persian Empire. And that's why Ahasuerus is going to deal with the Jews in lieu of the lessons he's learned from the book of Daniel. And that's why we're beginning with the book of Daniel, to be continued Be'ezat Hashem Thursday night.